Okay, we're really close to the close now. We're really close to the close. I see Liam Casey walking the other way out of the out of here. He's been a huge, huge star. I'm going in. I'm going in for the end.
Since it's also coming out next week now, all the, you know, Windows 8. We got Windows 8, Windows RT, the Surface tablet computer that they're working on. How do you view that? Are you going to work with Microsoft? I mean, you have a history with Microsoft.
I do. I used to be a Microsoft employee.
That's right. Yes. And so, how big of an opportunity do you view that for them? And are you guys excited about that, or kind of taking a wait and see approach?
Well, first of all, with respect to Microsoft, I have to say I've always been impressed with their courage. They are willing to throw everything up in the air and hit the reset button on what the user experience is.
Is that a nice way of saying this is going to be a total disaster?
No. I don't. I think that there are going to be some people who love it. I'm sure there are going to be people who might be not used to it. Who knows how it's going to come out. But I give them a tremendous amount of credit for really innovating on a spectacularly new, really cool UI. And they've really thought everything through from scratch. When you make a shift like that, it's always going to be somewhat turbulent.
Mike McHugh, founder and CEO of Flipboard.
I applaud them for what they're doing. And I hope that the platform thrives. And it probably Microsoft is going to put a lot of energy behind it. And it's going to be an important platform.
And so is that you saying that you guys are going to take the wait and see approach, though, on it? Just determine if you're going to do like a Windows 8 after a Windows RT application.
We are, we're going to go where the readers are. We have a lot of people using Flipboard now that I think if they adopt another platform like Windows 8, then obviously it would make sense for us to do that. And we have, just pragmatically, we still have 60 people, and we have a lot to on our place that we need to think through and prioritize. It's really a matter of sequencing. So we'll see when we can get to that. I wouldn't be surprised if we get something there.
All right, Mike. Well, time's up, unfortunately.
But thank you. It was a great pleasure.
That's it. There goes the guy who built the most extraordinary app I've ever seen for the iPad, Flipboard. I absolutely loved it.
Here we are, our final speaker of the 2012 Open Web Summit. Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, I'd love to welcome to the stage Robert Scoville and then Luke Wood of Beats by Dre.
Robert Scoville, the man I spoke to early this morning, is coming onto the stage now. In his blue shirt, he's running, he's raising his right hand in a dance, coming straight across the stage. He's in a pair of jeans, and he's talking to Luke Wood. Luke Wood from Beats. I don't actually know what Beats is.
I would send you off to the pubs thinking about him and what he's done for our screens and what and everything we looked at was influenced by that guy. So thank you, Bill. So the music industry, I've been blessed to be able to sort of have my fingers in a lot of cool things. Neil Young invited me and my producer to his studio to hear how music gets destroyed at every step of the distribution process. I mean, when we hear somebody play real music live, we're getting the full emotional effect of what these guys spent decades learning how to do, right? You were a guitar player.
Yeah.
And when he took me in the studio and we listened to his analog tape, and he records on a 2-inch analog tape, you know, which is really cool. You know, a nice stereo system. And then we talk about, like, it's downsampled to digital. Because digital is not an analog form anymore. It's pictures of an analog form. And it reduces the quality. And then we talk about distributing it 44.1 kilohertz digital sample to the world. Sometimes it gets destroyed. Some kids might think that maybe can compress it badly or reduce it up. And then proper method to compress it or to get it out. And then he showed me, well, even if you get it to that point, it gets destroyed further because you're using cheap ass Apple headphones. And the D to A converters in our iPads and iPhones aren't necessarily. possible in the industry. So how is Beats, where is Beats focusing on that stream of audio distraction to improve what we hear?
You know, similar to Neil, Beats is a response to the destruction of the audio ecosystem, right? So there's really, Dr. Dre, Jimmy, myself, I was in the music business for 21 years, and I started playing guitar when I was 12 years old and really never stopped. We saw three things happening, right? The first was piracy. And I'm not talking about the counts of piracy and its effect on the commercialization of music, I'm talking about actually music. So when you think about when Napster started, when the early days of LimeWire, 192 kilohertz files, 192-bit files, you had this horrible proliferation of ugly metadata, right? So the whole entire libraries were confused. You know, then you took that data and then you put it, whether it was through a laptop, which was, you know, really not meant for music, right? It was streaming music. You talked about cars. Cars have 19 speakers. The loudest thing in the car is the center speaker. Well, music's built for left and right. You know, there's nothing dedicated to the center channel. You talk about bundled earbuds, whether it was with feature phones or whether it was with other consumer electronics product. It was bundled earbuds cost 30 cents. So you're really looking at a completely polluted ecosystem of sound. And to be honest, most of us in the music business, we didn't recognize it, if you can believe it or not, right? Because we're sound fetishists. So we still had the studio, our systems at home that we tuned for years, right? We still had the cars we kept constantly tuning. You know, in the studio, we had millions of dollars of equipment, right, for listening to. And suddenly, it just started to dawn on us that no one was hearing the records the way the artists intended them, right? They were getting none of the content through. And most importantly, the emotion was gone. And music's all about emotion, right? So if the sound is better, the emotion is better. And so we addressed piracy, we addressed this kind of proliferation of consumer electronics product, where it really became about convenience and quality. And then the third piece was really trying to focus on what's happening to the contemporary production of music. So, you know, you and I were talking earlier about vinyl records, and you know, myself, I think about only the quality of recording, right? I'm a total fetishist in terms of quality of recording. And digital recording, sampling, the movement from taste to moving towards more bottom-end music, sound reproduction significantly changed the late 80s and 90s. So what you saw was, you know, suddenly you got a Pro Tools here, 192, 24-bit systems. You can reproduce the sampling, you have a very consistent bottom end. So the bottom end music changed. You know, in a lot of music now, for example, you know, technically anything between 30 and 120 hertz, right? And when you're talking about a lot of contemporary music, actually tunes the music, the melody line will be in the bottom end. So you think about a song by like Black Eyed Peas, right? Boom, boom, pow, boom, boom, boom. They're actually sampling and tuning the kick drum, right, to create the melody. A lot of existing consumer electronics product in the audio category was built in tunes in the 70s and early 80s. They never changed the spec. They left it the same as oscilloscope readings. So suddenly there's actually a proliferation of audio information, right, in a lower end of music that could not be articulated by existing sound systems. And so that was really going to be aggressive. Let's make something now that the clarity and the top of the vocal across, right, and the counterpoint of symbols and the tower that actually articulate the audio.
Yeah. And the consumers are responding. You have, what, 40% of the U.S. market for headphones over $100?
That's correct, yeah.
Pretty good for a company that's was born in 2008.
Yeah, we put our first headphone out in September 2008.
Crazy. Yeah. Tell me about that. What's happening today in your business?
So for Beats, it's an interesting moment in time for us, right? Because we started in 2008, and what we always own is we always own portfolio ideation. What do we want to make, right? What's the problem we can solve? And we always own design. Right? We work with a guy named Robert Brunner at Ammunition in San Francisco, and we've always owned design from start to finish. And the third thing, which is the most important, is we own the sound, right? And then we had a partner with Monster, who we worked with on sound and ODM management, logistics, you know, distribution, those pieces. You know, that deal recently came to an end. So we actually just launched two products, a small Bluetooth-enabled speaker device called the Pill, and a $299 headphone called the Executive, which is a noise-canceling headphone. And those are the first products that we've developed internally, entirely ourselves. So in the process this year, we're becoming a freestanding company, and it's a great opportunity for us to really chase our destiny.
Yep. Now, how do you produce this stuff? Because you switch partners when you're a startup. That sounds crazy to me, you know. And how do you get them made and get them in the market? And what's your partnership strategy?
You know, we have the reason I'm actually here is because we work with MKC and PCH on the package ship. You know, and he's a great partner for that piece of it, and on the logistical side. And what we've really done is focus on what we're good at, which is sound, right? So if you take it back to the honest truth of who are you. So Dre, Jimmy, myself, the acoustic engineers, the electric engineers, we focus on listening to records that we've been around, specifically the people in our building, which is unusual. We have recording engineers working in consumer electronics, right? We've taken people from the recording studio, put them in consumer electronics. We listen to albums that we made. So we listen to a record where I know what the kick drum sounds like, I know what the D12 mic in front of it sounds like, right? I know what the 451s over it sound like, I know what the C12s in the back of the room in the corner sound like. And if you're not hearing the top of the batter, not hearing the compression on the room, exactly what you heard when you made that record or when you're in the room when that record's made, the headphone doesn't come out, the speaker doesn't come out. So for us, it's really just trying to focus on the simplicity of our mission around sound, and then finding great sourcing partners, great manufacturing partners, you know, who can replicate that at scale.
Tell me what's your philosophy of building a brand? I mean, you're not Red Bull, you're not GoPro, you're Beats. Where does that brand come from? How do you argue out the brand and have maybe some values that you're trying to communicate to the brand?
Yeah, the first piece of what we do as a brand is we try to think about brand, right? So to be honest, most of the lessons we have is what we take from the culture business. Right, from in particular the music business. So when you're in the music business, what you do is you walk into a bar, you get a tape, you know, I'm old, so I still think of those tapes, and you basically, you listen to hundreds of pieces of music, and you say, that's the one, right? I hear something there, I see that group. And then you sign the group, you work with them, you help make the record, you pick the songs, right, it's curation. That concept is about finding something unique and special, and then you promote it like crazy, right? You promote it like you've had in water. And so we never think of brand because in the music business, every artist is a distinct entity in themselves. They're all a creative force, right? So you don't think of, you know, I signed TV on the radio. I don't think of TV on the radio as a brand, right? I think of it as a group. So we really think of headphones, solo, studio, pro, whatever our headphone, you know, portfolio brand names might be, or the Beats moniker. We think of Beats. Beats is the Rolling Stones to us, right? We just promote it like crazy. But we don't try to think like, all right, what does it mean to be Beats? We really think about, what does it mean to have that feeling around sound, you know what I mean? And just articulate that through everything we do in the market.
I used to run a consumer electronics store in Silicon Valley, a small one that's gone now. And that tells you something, the business keeps changing, the distribution of product changes, right? And we're seeing the destruction of companies like Best Buy, may argue with this. But they're under pressure because Amazon and other companies, we buy stuff right off the internet. How's that changing how you approach the way to get products in the customer's hands? How is that changing and how is that changing your approach to the market?
The most important thing for us, because first of all, we make hardware, right? We make experiential hardware. And we don't necessarily, what we're doing, it's interesting. In my opinion, right, we lost probably a generation to a generation and a half who has no idea what audio quality is, right? So if you think about the obsession, you really notice in your background, of screens, of video resolution, of 1080p, of, you know, processor, graphics cards, right? It was everything was about screens, you know, sight. But for some reason, the consumer times ignored sound. Sound became an afterthought, became the last thing, you know, the first thing you cut into being out was sound, right? So in an environment of that, we had to go back and teach people what audio is. And we had the experience that shocked us as music guys at the beginning when we launched the product that people never heard audio. It's like they never heard stereo before, or they'd never seen color. And to us, it's very similar to those of us who live our life on HDTV, right? Once you know, I have TiVo, right? Every once in a while I capture something non-HD. I can't watch it. I know that's irrational, but I'm just so addicted now to HD. That to me looks like it's a focus. And we're trying to do the same thing with audio. So to teach people about sound, we need physical manifestation of who actually hear the music they love on the headphones, right?
Well, the music industry is changing, so I love Skrillex. And Skrillex, it's not a band like this with guitars and trumpet and a flute, right? It's sampled sound from the get-go.
Yeah.
How is that changing how people think of sound now? Because I grew up with classical music and opera and places that I could go to hear bands live, so I had an ear for it. That's why I love high-end sound, right? With Skrillex, you're listening to a sample coming off a Macintosh or an iPad, right?
No, well, listen, and the significant part of that is, you know, it's bricolage, it's pastiche, right? It's what you put together. It's an extremely postmodern concept. And part of that is taking things from here and there and repurposing things. But when you do that, you know, it's really interesting. You're creating things that truly have never been heard before, right? It's not like, you can argue with Stradivari as a certain performer who gets that sound of a violin that's heard before. But when you take, you know, a dubstep bottom end and reverse the sample and you drop it technically, right? You sample it, you know, 3 octaves down, you can only do that digitally. So it puts up a, you know, from a listener standpoint, it's incredibly electric and exciting and dynamic because almost anything can happen. From a hardware standpoint, you've got great things that have very variable degrees of playback, right? Because what we want to do, we want to make things, you can listen to Ornette Coleman, you can listen to George Benson, right? You can listen to Miles Davis, and then you can listen to Steely Dan, but then you can listen to Skrillex and Zedd and Nero, and it all sounds great. That's our thing.
How do you do that? I know when I sell speakers, some sound really great with classical music, some sound really great with, like I sold tannoy speakers that sounded great with trumpets because they were little horn speakers, right? And some would sound great with Skrillex, I guess, right? If we didn't have Skrillex, then I had a tendency to run time for it. But how do you make it so that everybody's happy? Because you can optimize a product for the Skrillex fans and augment what Skrillex is doing with its music, right?
Because the name of the company is Beats by Dr. Dre, you know, one of the misnomers I feel is that we're somehow a hip-hop hip-hop, right? Which is absurd, because there's two founders of Beats by Dr. Dre. There's Dr. Dre, and if you think about Dr. Dre, with The Chronic, his first album, part of why it was so revolutionary is he put actual acoustic instruments in hip-hop, right? Everyone thought that was soft, it wasn't real. You know, he's the guy who did that. But then you also think the other co-founder's guy, Jimmy Iovine, who made Easter by Patti Smith, and he recorded and mixed Warner Run by Bruce Springsteen, and, you know, Damn the Torpedoes, he produced by Tom Petty. That's a fundamentally acoustic rock albums, right? So what we do is we have a large palette of music that we love that we tune everything to, a very similar set of songs, but it has to be voiced and be emotional for everything, right? We can't live in one lane, because that's not how anyone listens. It's a playlist world now.
Yeah. If I visit your team, let me make some assumptions. I visit the Target Racing team, the Indy 500 Racing team, and you know, when I grew up, I thought, oh, those guys are car mechanics. They don't need to have college degrees or anything. But every single person on the team had a PhD in something like aerodynamics or computer systems. Is that true? Because the way you get the music out of this little device that sounds big takes some brain power to think about how to spread that audio into the air, right? Is that a true guess?
Yeah, a lot of the investment we've done, especially last year, was in DSP engineering. You know, acoustic engineers, mechanical engineers. We try to do it is if we have an idea and a vision for something, to bring that to life technically is very, very hard. It takes a lot of technical heavy lifting. And the worst mistake I think any consumer electronics company can do is to basically offshore their R&D and allow ODMs, CMs, OEMs to go and build the work for them, right? So we've taken that with developer work in-house. So both from the software and hardware standpoint, that's what we're investing. But it also comes to how do you articulate what you're doing in the marketplace? So you want to find equally dynamic people, right? The brand's only as good as people talking about the brand. So we want to find equally good dynamic people. You know, in the music business, it was easy. You just hire music fans, right? You talk to someone for 5 minutes, and it didn't matter what they loved. You knew their passion, you know? In this business, it's a combination of packaged goods and media, so we have to find that kind of balance.
Yeah. You're locating here in Ireland.
I just found out from Patty that this conference was happening recently. I happen to be in business today because it's my first board meeting today of our new Irish company. So the actual international division of Beats is now located in Dublin, and we're really excited to be here.
Why Dublin?
You know, a lot of it had to do with...
London's cool, Berlin has great rains. Why Dublin?
This is the great thing about Dublin. You have location, you have an incredibly solid workforce, very technically sophisticated people, right? Dublin moves culture. There's obviously certain financial benefits to being in Dublin. So for us, it's kind of the center of everything. And the irony is, this is going to sound ridiculous, the final decision to move to Dublin came from the fact that Jimmy's had a relationship with YouTube for 25 years. And we thought, wow, let's go to where those guys live. We want to visit that.
Yeah. What else do we need to know about your business? It sounds like a fun place to be sometimes, you know. I wonder, what's it like to be in a board meeting with Dr. Dre and Eminem?
That's not the board with Dre.
But they come in the office and they argue with you.
Yeah. What's really fun about Beats is that the people involved around the company are evangelical. So one of the reasons that we, you know, sometimes people, because there's a ubiquitous nature to the brand, you see it a lot. And people think, well, it's marketing, right? The truth is, you see it because people are passionate about the musical experience. part of that had to do with the early people who adopted the headphones were musicians. So for us, every day, we just talk to people about what do they want to hear, what do they want to make. You know, when you saw people in the environment, whether it's in a music video,